Hey, everybody, welcome back to Little Things or Big Things Education Podcast. Coming up this week with our big idea of flexibility with our individual students, we're going to talk to you about like a number of different things that could show up and how we need to remain flexible so we keep that ultimate goal of keeping doors open for them. We'll talk about how to make sure that we're addressing some of the sleep needs and some insomnia and other reasons why maybe they're losing sleep, talk about mental health, as well as just the ridiculous workload a lot of our students are taking on, both academically as well as extracurricular. And Dave's going to close us out with a really good story time talking about not closing that door, having those real deadlines at the final, and allowing students the opportunity to keep that door open. May not always work, but it's always good to hear a good success story. So let's get to it. Yeah.
All right, folks, welcome back to Little Things or Big Things Education. He is coming to you live from Bowling Green, Kentucky, with the same energy of all of his four golden retrievers wrapped into his one body. He's got 7 years teaching math, 3 years working with Challenge Day, and tutoring one-on-one through it all. My best friend and awesome teacher, T-Free.
What up, everybody? You know K-Deb's coming to you from the soggy PNW. How is the weather out there?
It's actually 80 degrees today, man.
Gorgeous. Love it. He's got the whistle around his neck all the time because he's got 11 years of social studies, 20 years of coaching, and he's my best bud. Fantastic teacher. K-Dub.
Thanks for the intro. Thanks for listening to Little Big Things. Little Things Are Big Things Education. We are brought to you by Peakstake Mathematics. Please do not forget to rate and review us. We would love to hear from you at littlebiged.com. Please give us those 5 stars. We are continuing to get better and grow and hoping that our grades reflect that. So what's first today, Tim?
We're going to get kickstarted back into our big idea about flexibility with our students' needs and their different situations. And as promised from kind of that teaser at the end of Tuesday's episode, we're going to start to talk about like how important it is to really get flexible and adapt to all the variability that can come to us with our students, right? And we played around with some improv as just teachers and kind of rolling with the flow. But we also need to make sure that we're adaptable in our like individual plans. And like, obviously part of our connection is getting to know our students and figure out their individual needs. And like Dave said perfectly the other week, is like our goal really at the end of this all, when they graduate high school, and that's, you know, our goal is to make sure they graduate and they have as many doors open as possible. We don't want to be closing those doors on them. So how can we be flexible? How can we teach some good life lessons and get us there? So we're going to talk about a bunch of different things, but that's kind of our big idea today.
Yeah, and I think the one thing to connect to with all of that, I mean, I know the whole podcast is really about the power of relationships and being connected with your students, but this is one of the pillars of why that is so important. Because if you don't have those connections and those relationships that we've hopefully given you some ideas on how to build or some new ideas on how to establish those, this is the why those things are important from a very practical standpoint. So I think that the relationships and that connection are valuable in and of themselves. And from an academic, helping your students stay motivated to build off of last week's podcast theme and or to get them across the finish line, knowing what's going on with them is what's going to allow you to be flexible to whatever situation that student happens to be facing that day, that week, that semester, whatever, you know, whatever you're facing in that moment when you're working with a kid.
Right. I think one of the things that has been almost more prevalent in my class this year with all the weirdness that's been going on is like sleep deprivation and just like how many kids I swear are falling asleep in my class every day. And you guys have been with us long enough that you know that if you're falling asleep in my class, it's not because it's a boring, quiet classroom, right? Like that kid's like falling asleep in my class with disco ball lights, music, multiple conversations, like the wheels spinning and all over the place and like trying to get people up on the board. Like, and they're still like out cold. And this has been a challenge for me, and I try not to take it personal. And I think that's one of the first parts is like, there's got to be something going on, right? And so I've got to have the conversations. I got to get to know the student, like, what's going on? Why are we falling asleep? And, you know, there's a lot of different reasons for that, and trying to figure out, like, all right, you know, how do I make sure you are able to be set up for success if this is the only place you're getting sleep for whatever reason? And like, yo, like, how can we keep you awake in class more often? So trying to work on some life skills. But I don't know. That's been an interesting one. Dave, have you noticed that at all this year? And I know you guys are a little more virtual than in person. So
maybe we're starting hybrid on Monday. So I have not seen any of my students in person yet this year. But I think that has its own causes. You know, I talked in a previous podcast about one of my students who had shared that they were dealing with some insomnia issues. I know that all of it wasn't related to just the added screen time, right? Like you're asking these kids to, I mean, all of us, to be honest, to be on our screens for hours on end. And we know before the pandemic even started, we knew that looking at a cell phone screen or computer screen right before you went to bed was just a bad idea, right? That blue light or whatever the terminology is. So yeah, I've definitely seen it with my students. I think another part of it that I've, speaking of being flexible, is right, like the application that we use for school is called Canvas, and there's some things about it that are great, there's some things that are a little wonky, but it, one of the things it does is it asks you, I think you can ignore it, but it asks you to put a time that you want an assignment to be due, and it has a specific time, and I've just started leaving it blank. And what I tell my kids is before you go to bed, so I, like whether that's 4 o'clock in the morning and you're working on it from 2 to 4 or whatever, here's the deal. I'm going to be up at 6, and one of the first things I'm going to do is check to turn, like, you know, after I've had a cup of coffee, I'm going to see who's turned in their work. And I think just being flexible in that little way of, we don't have the normal structure, so kids are going to be working at things at different times. And the insomnia part of that is a quick connection to just, like, we're on our screens all the time, so kids are having a hard time falling asleep.
Right. No, I totally agree with you there. And I love technology, right? And I 100% like get and acknowledge that it is an addiction at the exact same time.
Oh yeah.
And so it's easy for us to numb out. It's easy for us to be distracted. It's easy for us to have so many things going on at once that our brain literally is triggering like dopamine all the time with dings, mm-hmm. vibrations and bells and pop-up ads. And even if you're in the class, like in my classroom, we try really, really hard to have them on their Chromebooks just doing what's the assignment. Like we've got like the Impero or whatever it's called that we can see the students' work that's up. And like my co-teacher's over there just closing people's tabs. And it's like, no, get off of whatever game or whatever YouTube video. Like they're watching like soccer games live while they're trying to do their homework. And it's like they're going split screen and there's always multiple things going. And like, yeah, of course you can't sleep. Your brain has been like split attention for the last 8 hours while you're at school. And then you go home and you're trying to like unwind and decompress and just be with yourself. And so I think having the flexibility, like you said, just with the due dates and be like, yo, like just make sure it's done before you go to bed. And like, I'll check it when I get up. I think that's good. Like, flexibility and due dates. For me, the flexibility in when they learn is something I've tried to be really diligent about. And so that's like, hey, like if you're going to fall asleep right now, you got to promise me that you're going to go home and watch this 20-minute video, right? Like, this is me in class teaching, like, because I record a lot of my classes live and then I just post those. Sometimes they're full classes and I think those are less effective, like if it's like a 45, 50 minute video versus when I go back at the end, I'm like, hey, this is what we learned on Monday and Tuesday in like 15 minutes. I think those are more impactful, but those take more time, right? So I don't do them all the time just because of my schedule, but trying to get the students to always have the option to learn from a video if they're not going to be physically present or mentally present in my class for a number of reasons. Sleep being one of them has been a big one for me this year. Like sixth period, the sun's been coming out, you know, the classroom's starting to get warm, the kids are worn out and they start fading out. Especially because we were about 3 weeks now. I think we had about 2 weeks before spring break, and now we're the first week after spring break where we're back literally 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. And that has been an adjustment and an endurance thing, really, for the students to be in school for 37 hours a week.
Yeah, that would be a shift for a lot of kids around the country. I mean, I think the other thing about being flexible to the sleep situation, I like how you talked about multiple reasons that a kid could be wanting to sleep in your class, not because they're bored with your class, but because of outside factors. And I really appreciated that you didn't like pinpoint something or try and stereotype based on a student. I know one of the things that I've mentioned in passing before is that there's an idea around scheduling too, that it would be really helpful if students didn't always see their teacher at the same time. So if they are having that issue, that maybe you see that person first period one day, but you see them at the end of the day another day, and so they would have the ability to, maybe they've caught up. But I think the first thing that you said when it came to the kid who's sleeping is the most important thing. Don't take it personal, and then figure out like what's going on. You're in a different position than a lot of us. I think a lot of us would have to have that first step of introspection, like what can I do in my class to make sure that they're not falling asleep because they're bored or things are dry, whatever, right? Like if I don't do this as much, but if I was like a classic social studies teacher who just got up in front of the podium and talked for an hour every day, that would be, I should actually take that personal and think about why the student is falling asleep in my class.
Unless you're a phenomenal storyteller.
That's true. Okay. They're
one of my favorite social studies classes ever was in college. This dude was the greatest storyteller ever. 90 minutes. I could not stop writing notes.
We had one of those at Bothell, actually. I don't know if you ever had Mr. Hill, but he was like that at Bothell. He would talk nonstop. I mean, even about art, which I'm not even that – I wasn't into before I took his class. But I mean, yes, good job catching that it's not always true that the lecture is not going to be – entertaining, but I just think the fact that like you are not lucky, you've worked hard enough to be in a place where you know that the reason that the kid's falling asleep isn't because your class isn't engaging and that there's nothing to provide that kid with the boost to try and stay engaged or something else going on, but to then not take it personal and get mad that like, man, I'm doing this, I'm playing music, I'm like be angry at the kid, instead going, okay, this kid's dealing with this, what are some things that could be the reason behind that? And then that flexibility piece that you mentioned where like, okay, dude, if you're not going to be able to be awake during my class, I'm not going to yell at you. I'm not going to kick you out. I'm not going to whatever. I'm just going to make an agreement with you that these videos are available. Here's where the videos are. You've got to do this at a time that fits your schedule, because clearly my class doesn't fit your schedule right now.
Right. Right. And I mean, so many of these things, right, that we got to be flexible with. I think the next one, and this is big also this year, mental health, right? Mm-hmm. Like I, even this week, had a student where the start of class, you know, and I've gotten to know this student pretty well over the course of the year and have started to learn some of the chaos and variability of home life and things like that. Mm-hmm. They're like, yo, Friedberg, can I just go work on the common space today? And I was like, yeah, like I've worked with her before. We already have some of these guidelines and setups that we've already built in structure. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, just, you know, you know, the videos are built into the form. Check it out. I'm going to get the class rolling. I'll keep coming out. I'll pop in. I'll check. You can ask me questions, things like that. And so like, you know, to a certain degree, I'm almost holding class in two classrooms at the same time. Part of that is I've gotten really comfortable with that this year because our new building we're working in, I teach in literally four different like classrooms. We go from classroom to classroom as teachers this year. And so I'm comfortable with relocating and teaching from any space. And again, that goes with some of the improv we did on Tuesdays, just learn how to always say yes. And what's next? Like, what's my next best step? Mm-hmm. And just go with it. So, you know, I was ready for that student to go out and do some individual learning just because of the situation. But then, you know, you also get to ask that one deeper question. Are you actually okay? And like a lot of times that's the first time that somebody's checked in with that student all day. And hopefully you've taken the time all year to build the trust. And all of a sudden, like, boom, like guard drops, like she's like on the verge of just like emotional collapse because there's so much going on, and she always keeps a tough front. She's a tough kid, and she's had to be. And you know, I'm like, no, like we're gonna actually stop for a moment. They'll be okay. Like, I know my students have enough going on and they can work independently. They know what's coming up next. Like, I've set up my class structure to operate without me if needed. And so I'm going to be here and we're going to deal with it. And then, you know, try to figure out the best solution. So in that situation, you know, I made sure that we got her down to the counselor because it was at that point where we needed to have that intervention and start to work with the team and all that collaboration that we've talked about as well. Like, all the pieces start to come together. And we make sure that the best learning can happen for that student. And, you know, she's been gone for a few days at this point. And I know that when she gets back, we're going to have to very specifically check back in, make sure the mental health part's taken care of, because that's number one. And then two, how can I make sure I get you caught back up so you don't feel overwhelmed and re-trigger something? And two, I want to make sure that you know your learning's equally as important, and I'm going to get you there. So the never give up concepts, right?
Yeah, and I think a couple things come to mind hearing you tell that story. The first is an appreciation for your stopping and focusing on the first part of what the student said, which was that, like, I'm struggling right now. And even though the student tried to, like, then move to the second thing very quickly, the fact that you, like, pulled them back. I had a somewhat similar experience via email. Again, we're remote still, of, like, student sharing something that was difficult and then asking how to make up the work that they missed from, the original thing being difficult. And, you know, the student had shared this with all four of his teachers. And I'm not saying this to make myself sound great. It's more of a reminder to all of us that this is really important. Is my first email, I didn't even address the work that the student was asking about making up. I just checked in about, I'm sorry about what happened. Are you getting what you need? How are you feeling? And then a quick thing about, like, if you do want to still, if you are ready to do the work, let me know. If you're not, that's okay. We can, you know, we can figure it out at another point in time. And then they responded and were very thankful that I'd done the first thing and literally pointed out, I emailed all four of my teachers, at the same time. I've heard back from everybody. You're the only person that, like, didn't just go straight to, here's the work that you need to do. So I appreciate you doing that. And I think that's something that we all just need to remind ourselves of, especially when the kids are the ones who are trying to give us permission or the path into moving on to the next thing. Cause that also drives disconnection, right? Like, that idea that we're not sitting with the hard thing first is really important. And then the flexibility piece to that, what that reminds me of, you mentioned something about last week and the yes and principle and the motivation principle. I was thinking about, you know, we talk about how it's become really common, and I think it's something that happens. I think it's a universal thing that's always been there, is that people always complain about kids these days, right? And there's this assumption that there's, like, this lack of mental toughness, or that there's more anxiety than ever or more stress than before, and that kids don't have the toughness to move through this. And this is one of a couple of places today in the flexibility conversation where I wanted to remind people that, like, first of all, they are products of the environments that we have created for them. Like, that's number one. So if they are more entitled, or if they're more lazy, or if they are less mentally tough than you were growing up because you were so awesome, then think about what you did to create that circumstance, or what our society has done to create that circumstance. In the case of mental health, I think the more appropriate thing to really focus on, though, is for a long time, it wasn't okay to share or to talk about what was difficult in our lives. And we are finally getting to a place where that is okay. And I think that's a good thing. And as teachers, our job in that is not to solve it, right? Like, I'm not going to help a kid overcome losing a family member or an anxiety around speaking in public, right? Like, that's not my job. We have counselors and school psychiatrists whose job it is to take care of, like, actually solving isn't the right word, but helping on the mental health front. My job is to be flexible. And when that student is feeling in the appropriate headspace to show up and learn, to be ready for them and to not have any judgment on why they weren't here before, but just to celebrate they're here now, we're going to learn now, and not worry about getting upset that they're not on the same timetable that we want them to be on.
Yeah, I love the bring back to the timetable piece too, because like everything we're talking about, it keeps like throwing this like reminder to me that's like, oh my gosh, like I used to be, and I try really hard not to be anymore, so rigid. Like I was like, no, this is how it's supposed to be, right? And the more expectation I put on how my classroom should be, how my students should behave, how my lesson should go, how the test performance and outcome should be, because we did this lesson and then we did this follow-up and we did that exit slip and I worked one-on-one with this kid. I know they're going to be successful. And then it just went all to crap. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, now what? And the more I've gotten away from the idea of my expectation of what life needs to look like and what it actually is, the more I've become a better teacher, the more I've gotten rid of expectations, right? I still have high standards, and this is what I'm going to put out there, but I also have shifted my expectation to, this is more than likely not going to work as planned, and I'm going to have to make an adjustment. Like that's my new like go-to is, what am I going to be able to do to overcome the hurdle or the misstep or whatever's going to come up? Like I game plan ahead of time that this could happen. And not like the sky is falling, worst case scenario fallout. Like, oh my gosh, I'm pessimistic about everything, but I'm hopeful this is my outcome. And when this happens, I know how to react to it and how to roll with it.
Mm-hmm. That is something that I am also kind of struggling through how to get better with. I do think that being a social studies teacher, it's a little bit easier because like my state standards, there's technically content stuff, but there's already so much content. Like when they say world history and they tell you from 1400 to present and they haven't adjusted that for 50 years, it's like, stuff has happened in the last 50 years that we might need to talk about. There's more stories to tell because we're not just telling the old white guy version of the story anymore. That said, we have like this permission that at least at our school where like we don't put things in the gradebook based on content, it's skills, right? Like we're working on speaking and listening. We're working on critical reading. We're working on using evidence to support a claim. And when you rephrase what your focus on learning is, it also makes it much easier. At least for me, it's been much easier to worry less about when the student is walking into the door ready to learn, because particularly for using like proficiency grades for standards-based grading, you're also, what you're looking for is, can the student show the ability to do that skill at that grade level, right? Or at that whatever level. And then once they do that, your job, if you're really pushing kids to the next level, is, okay, you've done it once at this level. Now I'm gonna push you a little bit further and say, hey, now I want you to do it this way, right? I wanna add this layer of complexity or difficulty or independence, or maybe sometimes doing it with somebody else makes it harder, right? But having that part of it, I think really helps detach. That's like a strategy for detaching yourself, or at least for me, it's been a strategy for detaching myself from really having like this strict adherence to it has to go this way.
Yeah, for sure.
One of the other things that we talked about last week that I think is really pertinent to this flexibility conversation that's really more about the students is the idea of, and I think you brought it up in the connection activity on Tuesday as well, is the idea of keeping doors open, right? Like our job and the student's job is you walk into the doors in high school, depending on, you know, whatever privileges you're walking in with that are out of your control, right? You have a certain number of doors that are open to you. And your job is to finish with all of those doors still open. And the reason I think that's really important is that, and the thing I loved about our improv activity that I want to think about how to incorporate more in my classroom is the idea that students also need to be flexible to changing interests, right? Like I thought I really wanted to be a doctor, and then I realized I don't really like looking at people who have been cut open, right? Like that is actually grossing me out. I don't want to be a doctor anymore. If you've put all of your eggs into that basket and you've actually closed other doors because you were so focused on the one goal or the one option that you thought you wanted to pursue, you're kind of hosed when it comes time to maybe pivot and make a different decision. And so I think that's another thing where flexibility for our students is really important too, right? Like giving our students some lessons on being flexible enough with their own interests that it's okay to like change course.
Well, and I think as teachers and coaches and parents, we need to also keep that in mind, because I think this specialization at age seven, definitely by age 12, right? Like, you can't be a multi-sport athlete anymore, because in order to play one sport, it requires a full-time job commitment year round. Mm-hmm. That is wild. And I think it adds to some of the stress and the overcommitments and that atmosphere we have created for why these students are like, yeah, I didn't sleep last night because I played, you know, back-to-back doubleheader baseball game. With a hour rain delay, we finished at 11 o'clock. I was home by midnight. I then took a shower, and then I tried to do your homework until 2-3 in the morning. And now I'm supposed to be at school at 7:30, you know, a.m. Like, yeah, of course I'm going to sleep in your class. or I didn't do your homework, you know, or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, or I didn't do the homework. And I think, like, there's two things about that immediately pop into my mind. Right? I can already picture some of the teachers who think that athletics are a distraction, and they're going to be like, well, they shouldn't be doing that in the first place. That student might not, we talked about this last week with motivation, that student might not give a rip about your class if they don't have the, whatever the co-curricular is, whether it's because like our school, we have a banging drama department, right? Like we put on some freaking amazing performances, but the kids are also there late working on stuff. Yes. And so like, again, if the kids don't get to, if people don't get to pursue their passions, then they're not going to do the checkbox stuff, right? Like I'm into drama, but I have to go to this economics class. They have to go if they know that they can't do the thing that they're passionate about. If they don't check the box on the economics, then they'll do what they need to check that box. If they don't have the thing that they're passionate about, they're probably not even going to bother. So I want to just like push that argument off to the side that like, oh, they shouldn't be up late doing the co-curriculars. That's nonsense. And then the second piece to what you spoke about with the specialization, I said there were a couple places where I wanted to talk about disagreeing with the premise that kids in the modern day, kids these days are lazy or entitled or whatever. Like you think about, we talked about this a little bit before the podcast, and I think it's a good note to bring up how much time we spent on football, like what the time commitment was expected to be in 2002 versus what it is today, which I know very, you know, I'm very well aware of that. I'm a coach in 2020, and it's very hard sometimes when you're building the schedule to be like keeping up with the Joneses and realizing that, man, we're asking a lot of our players right now. And I think
we're demanding, right? Really, it's not, really, hey, really good point. Come to practice, you should come to workout, or you should come to this, you know, extra rehearsal, or you should come help with set design. It's no, you come to this or you're not part of this. Like it's a demand. It's not an ask.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's funny, like, as you say that, the other thing that I think about is it's a demand of the kid that's probably on the outlier sides of it, right? It's a demand on the part of the kid who's least likely to benefit from it. So I'm thinking of, let's take two kids, for example, from our school, and I'm going to use names and I hope they don't care. We are really good friends with Brian Wood, right? He did not play a whole lot. He was right. Partially there because, like, all of us were there as friends, like our friend group of 10 or 12 people. We all played on the football team. And so he was there partially because if he wanted to hang out with us, that's where we were. Right. But the other part of it was, like, he wasn't being pushed to a point where he felt like he couldn't be on the team if he wasn't lifting weights at 5 o'clock in the morning, January through June, right? Like, that was not an expectation at that time. That's an expectation at a lot of places, especially as academic periods are getting taken away and, the like, all sorts of other tangential things to talk about. So would he have continued through that? Because he's not going to see the field anymore if he shows up at the weight room, right? Like he's not going to get enough out of that to like vault his athleticism to the point that he was going to pass you on the depth chart. Like that wasn't going to happen, right?
Probably not.
And then on the flip side, let's say Justin Hughes decides not to show up to the weight room January through June, but he shows up in August, or he shows up in June. He's still the fastest kid on the team. He's still 6'3". You know, he's still got hands the size of a football helmet, right? Like, guess who's still going to play? Guess who's still going to be on the team? The kid that didn't make the commitment. There are a few coaches far and in between that will actually tell that kid to kick rocks, but like most coaches are going to let that kid continue to play. And so I think when we're talking about our students these days being lazy or having that sense of entitlement, I think understanding the level of commitment that comes with participating in modern day co-curriculars, like the idea, like specialization of it, is a really important thing for all of us to be aware of. And who, like, the adults are very clearly the ones who are responsible for that. And there's also a connection to our mental health with that. I don't know if you're seeing this as much as I am. You know, we teach in very different communities right now, but at our school, a lot of the parents, and to some extent, I think it's very hard to know chicken and egg, right? Whether it's from the student or from the parent, who are playing the sport because they actively think that it's going to get them into college.
Right.
Like, and or like even pay for
a paycheck, basically.
Yeah, like, and or actually going to pay for college. And I think back to like our time on our football team. I know I really wanted to play college football, and I wasn't really thinking about the fact that I was 5'9" and 160 pounds. Like, that wasn't going to happen because I did not run a 4.140. But I don't think a lot of guys on our team are really thinking about playing at the next level, right? Like, and so you add that added stress or pressure on top of the sports commitment. Now you're creating a mental health issue on top of that. So, like, yeah, it's no wonder that kids these days are having a harder time balancing the workload and might come across as lazy or like they're quicker to drop a commitment. But that's because the commitment that we're asking for, like the entry level commitment that we're asking for, is absurd compared to the entry level commitment that we were asking for 20 years ago.
Right. And as you were speaking, I was like feverishly over here, like looking up a statistic so I could give some actual accurate answers here.
Beautiful.
Cause we're, you know, we talk about, I think, the co-curriculars, we talk about, you know, the drama department, we talk about our athletics, because you and I, obviously that was important with us, and we know it really well. But the other thing that I start to think about too is how many of my students, if we say strictly academic right now, we don't even look at athletics, mm-hmm. strictly academic, how many of our students now are almost expected to take 3, 4, 5 AP classes all at once? Who does that and why? Right. And it's because, oh, well, college is so difficult to get into, so I need more AP classes to set me aside. Oh, well, you know, everybody's doing 6 AP classes now, so I got to go volunteer and I got to get my honor society credits. And, oh, well, you know, they also like a well-rounded kid, so I can't just be really academic and really smart. I got to go join the sports team as the JV all-star, you know, and ride the pine and do my time. And it's like if you – I was – and the stat I was looking up was AP – typically assigns 45 minutes to an hour and a half per night of homework. And I believe that. Like, I've talked to some of my – like, I've got a student that was on my volleyball team who, one of our top performers, got like a crate – I'm not very familiar with ACT because we were SATs, but I think it's like out 38 or 40 or something, right? And she had like 2 points off of the highest score. Like, she's brilliant. Kid, she's in 4 or 5 AP classes. She's a starter on the volleyball team. Like, she's nuts. And I'm like, if she's literally doing school from, let's say, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., let's just round number it there. She's got 7 hours a day of school. Yep. She's got 4 or 5 AP classes that are giving her 4 or 5 hours of homework. But let's just call it 3 hours of homework. Let's be nice on it. A night. And then she's got 3 hours of volleyball, plus, because she's a good teammate, she's going to the freshman game, she's going to the JV game, she's supporting. So she's doing her homework in the stands while supporting her classmates. No joke, in season, I've watched this student get to school at 7:30 to get a little extra support when she doesn't know what she's doing, go through a, you know, 3 p.m., stay after school to get a little extra help because she wants to make sure she's doing the right thing, go home basically to check in with mom and dad, drop off a book bag, get back to the school by 5 p.m., and does not leave till 10 p.m. when we're cleaning up the gym. That's the most insane schedule, like, ever. Like, if you made a teacher work 9 hours consistently a day, we lose our minds. Most of us do it, right? Like, really good teachers, we're putting in 45-hour weeks, easy, right?
Easy, yeah, I would say.
Easy, right? Even 10-hour days. But a 10-hour day is 7 p.m. to 5 p.m. Like, this kid is doing 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. like a 15-hour day in season on a regular basis so they can get into school. Like I burn out, and I'm crazy, and I burn out when I'm putting in 12-hour, 13, 14-hour days consistently. Like, you've worked the fireworks stand with me. We do 13, 14-hour days. And at the end of those 8 days, like, I'm like nutty. I'm losing my mind. And these kids are doing four AP classes and trying to do all their extracurriculars all at the same time. Like, yeah, of course we're putting this insane demand on people. Like, well, we have to be flexible with that.
One of the things that's funny, when you brought up like the number of AP classes, I remember actively getting hollered at by one of the counselors in our building. So we, first of all, we do something that's different at our, in our district. And I think it's really a statewide Oregon thing. We offer 8 classes a semester. Okay. Or a year. And the idea behind that is that it creates space that if you fail a class, it's very easy to get the credit recovery in without like having to come to outside school time stuff. But what that also sets up is that you could literally get all of the credits that you need to graduate if it weren't for the fact that 2 of the classes are you can't take until you're a senior. You can graduate as a junior, right? You're basically taking a whole extra year of classes. So we have these 8 period schedules, and I had students that were signing up for 4 or 5 AP classes, and I was seeing the impacts of that my first 2 years in the building. So then when we started doing these things where every year we ask our students, like, we put out, like, here's all the courses. We do this whole fair during one of our essentially instead of an assembly where students can come and like walk around and check out all the electives that are being offered and whatnot. And then we have these parent conferences to help students. These are all great things to help students and parents think about what courses they want to forecast for. And I was shocking parents when I was like, and kids, when I was like, do not take 4 AP classes next year. That is stupid.
Yeah.
What you should do is take 1 or 2, do really well with them, and then take 1 or 2 the next year, right? Like, don't take, because you're going to run out of options if you're taking, if you take a bunch your sophomore year and a bunch your junior. And some of this was like kids actively trying to like rig the schedule so that they would have a really, really hard junior year and then have like a basically like a an easy senior year. But I'd also seen, kind of my final kick over the head with that was, I had a football player who did do that, right? Like, took all the really hard courses AP, basically only had to come to school every other day as a senior, then got told he wasn't allowed to play sports if he did that, changed his schedule so he was only coming in the afternoons, whatever. He didn't get into some of the schools that he thought he was going to get into, and they actively told him, like, we didn't like that you took your senior year off. And so I started telling my students, like, first of all, here's this story of why you don't want to like create an easy schedule for yourself for senior year, but also you're going to do better. Your mental health is going to be better if you lighten up. And I had someone from the career center and someone from the counseling center, like, write me these, just like, I can't believe you would tell anybody that, like, that's not what we should be telling kids. Like, they need to take as many AP classes as they can, as soon as they can. And I was like, hey, you're just wrong.
Right. So, but then you have the people who argue that, oh, well, now you're destroying my kids' college chances, right? Like, it's.
Well, that was the thing, though. And I mean, again, this is very anecdotal, right? This is 3 years of talking to however many students I've had. And, you know, there's only a certain percentage that are like making that like crazy push to try and do that. But all of the parents who heard that, like, you could see the stress just roll off their shoulders. And you could see the students just like looking at parents, hoping that this plan was going to get approved. Because, like, even thinking about it, it's daunting.
Yeah.
And so it's like, now I teach 9th graders. I'm like, you know what? Your sophomore year, take 1 AP class. See how it goes. And make sure you take it in something that you care about. If you don't like social studies, don't take an AP social studies class. Right? If you really like science, take AP whatever. Right? Take AP biology. Do that. Figure out how that goes. Because, and if it goes well, then try something else. Right? Continue to expand and push yourself. But like, the idea of doing too much is something that I think it's funny that we keep calling kids these days lazy when you think about the amount of effort and work that is going into co-curriculars and school at this point in time, in terms of like what the kind of baseline expectation is. It's way higher than it was, or at least than what I remember it being when I was 16.
Right. And I'd almost argue to say, and this happens in a lot of things in our world, right, and some of the systematic stuff that's been designed, is I think we're getting more extremes. Mm-hmm. I think because those standards and expectations are up, our high achievers are being pushed harder than they've ever been pushed. Mm-hmm. And I think, like you said, sometimes we have those people that are like, why would I go to 7 a.m. weight room for 6 months out of the year knowing I'm not going to get extra play time? put in the same amount of time and effort. And so they've just kind of given up. And I think that's where we start to think about, oh, they're lazy, right? And it's like, no, you've made the barrier to entry so high. Why would I even try? And then you tell them they're lazy and you write this story and then they hear the story and then retell the story. And, you know, there's that spiral effect that's going on there. But yeah, I think the biggest thing though that I kind of want to leave with before we get you into story time is this idea of like, keep the doors open, never give up. And whatever is going on in their life, we can help them be successful. And I believe as a teacher, it's on me to find that solution because there's already so much on their plate. And you know, I try to be as creative as I can, and sometimes I'm good at it, and sometimes I'm not. And it's an improvisation, and it's a game. And the more I think we have fun with it, and the more we try stuff and fail and learn from it, I think the better we can show up to help these students have their future as wide open as we can possibly make it for them. So
awesome. All right, folks, quick interruption before I get into story time to plug littlebiged.com as a reminder to check out all the free resources that we have on there. Last week, Tim shared a really great resource with understanding how much money a student actually makes for showing up to class in their future lives. Paying your future self is a term that I know he uses a lot in his classroom. And this week, he's sharing another really cool resource with us. For those of you that listen to the Tuesday podcast, some prompts and ideas and even some videos on improv as a way to develop flexibility amongst your staff and or amongst your students. So again, littlebiged.com. Please go ahead and visit us and give us any reviews you have as well. And now back to story time. I think I 100% agree with everything you just said. And I'm going to use story time to kind of build on all of that. I will say, as I get into my story time here, that if I am honestly reflecting on who I am as a teacher, I think being flexible has certainly become my greatest strength. And it might have always been my greatest strength. And I do think we always need to be aware that oftentimes our greatest strength is also like our greatest weakness, right? Like there's fears of how rigorous am I being if I'm always being this flexible and, you know, things of that nature. And I have a really good story from very recently. I'm not going to use any names, obviously, of a student who, like I said, we are in remote learning. And we've been in remote learning all year. You know, it's been literally more than 12 months since we left the classroom, and we have not been back in the classroom with our students, right? That was last March. It's April now. It's been, you know, a year and a couple of weeks. So we had quarter grades because we're doing all the stuff that I've talked about in the past where we've taken semesters and cut them in half and all this stuff. So quarter three is 8 weeks long. It's the first time I've met this group of students. I don't know these kids from Kane. And starting off with them and trying to get through a whole semester of modern world history together. At one point, just like as a piece of anecdotal evidence of something that I, you know, it's anecdotal evidence for me, but when I reached out to people nationwide who are coaches and teachers or just building wide, I don't feel like it wasn't just me. At one point during quarter three, 30% of my students had a failing grade in my class. And to fail my class means that you're not showing up and you're not doing work. That's what that means. So usually I have like one or two kids a class that are failing at the end of the, you know, when it actually comes time to turn grades in. So this is like a really high thing, and I'm trying to do some reflection and trying to figure some things out. And I'm really just noticing like our kids have hit a wall, right? Like being remote, the motivation has dipped dramatically, and trying to think about, usually I'm very flexible on due dates, but there's still like a, hey, when we come back from spring break, I'm not taking anything from before spring break anymore, because that's just like that's from too long ago. And some of that is just like, I don't want you to try and make up 24 assignments in 2 weeks. Like I'm trying to like force you to get a couple things done so that we can get to the next procrastination time period and whatnot. Like I love this new word for procrastination that one of our teachers came up with as being deadline oriented versus being a procrastinator. But I had a student who emailed me, the quarter ended last Thursday. I had a student who emailed me the Friday before that, had only attended, I went back and looked at the attendance, something like 20% of the classes, and pretty much all of those were like in the first 2 or 3 weeks. So I hadn't been to class in basically a month. Hadn't turned in an assignment in 6 weeks. And they email me with the, "Hey, Mr. K-Dub, sorry I've been away. I just have not been, I've been having a really hard time getting out of bed. Just, I haven't had any motivation to do any schoolwork. I don't really know why, but I haven't been feeling motivated." So again, first thing, like, "Hey, I'm glad that you're motivated and whatnot." But it took me a really long time to get to that point. I did not respond to that email in the moment because I recognized, thankfully, that my initial response was inappropriate. Because my initial response is, I didn't get to the end of the email. The end of the email was, "What do I need to do to get an A in your class this quarter?" And so I can tell by your laughter that your response to that is very much what I almost wrote in an email. I literally hit the reply button, started typing. By the time I got done typing their name, I realized I was about to be a complete jackass.
Delete.
just discard that and walk away for a minute and like recalibrate pandemic, everything that's going on, right? But like if that had happened even last year in person learning, I would have just been like, you would need a time machine is what you would need in order to get an A in my class at this point. Right. Like I will get you to the finish line, but an A, you got to be crazy. So part of it's the pandemic and some own personal growth stuff I'm doing it. Part of it is being flexible to the moment in time that we are living in, right? Like we are living through a very dramatic period of our history and a student not being able to get motivated enough to get out of bed, to do the work that they need to do is a very real thing for a lot of people. And so I took the time. I was like, okay, these are all the things that are going on. I'm not just going to pass the kid. But I said, all right, here's the deal. You need to show highly proficient work on a number of occasions, right? You can't just do it once, right? You do part of being highly proficient is being able to consistently be highly proficient, right? You can't just do it once and call yourself highly proficient or whatever above standard, whatever your language is. So I emailed them a list of assignments that they needed to do and told them the scores that they would need to get. Share, you know, the rubrics are here. This is where the assignments are on Canvas. If you need to check in with me one-on-one on a Zoom, feel free to do so. But I need all of this stuff. If you want an A, I need all of this stuff by Friday morning because grades are due on Friday night. Did that. I sent that email and I was like, that's a lot of work. I don't think this kid's going to do all of that. I'm assuming I'm getting an email back about, can I get an extension or whatever? Get an email back. Kid asked to have a Zoom meeting, has three very specific questions about three very specific assignments that it's very clear that they've like already gone through and looked at everything because for whatever reason, I don't know, they had a drink of Red Bull. They listened to Dua Lipa. I don't know. They got motivated. They were ready to go. And instead of closing that door, I stayed open to, okay, this kid's ready to learn right now. Friday night at like 4 p.m., this kid turned in everything, and all of it was quality work. Nice. And, you know, I have all these triggers for like finding out, did you just copy and paste? Did you cheat, right? And so it's very clearly all their own language. I can compare it back to some of the assignments they turned in earlier in the year to like just double check a couple things because I want to make sure that I'm not completely having the wool pulled over my eyes. But kid turned in everything and turned in A work. Kid got an A, right? Like now what would have happened if I would have just said the original email, like, dude, you're crazy. You can't get an A in this class when you're emailing me the week before the quarter's over to ask how to make up basically half of the, or 70% of the class. Like this is not going to happen. But you know, now the kid was able to show the learning. They did the assignments that I thought were really valuable, right? Like learning the history that slaveholders want us to forget. That reading, really, really valuable, really important. Learning about Mansa Musa, maybe the richest man in the history of the world who was from Africa, a story I never learned until a year and a half ago, really important for that kid to be able to learn that. None of that would have happened if I would have just shut that door down. And then here's the kicker that is my favorite part of the story. We're getting started with this quarter. We've got all this weird stuff where we're doing all this training for hybrid. So students are on their own for 3 days to do work. Like we've been actively told, like, you don't have to respond to email. You don't need to be posting anything. Like just the kids are on their own, just post work. We created an assignment where we picked out some music that was it was very directly an act of resistance to the institutional racism of the United States. And then had three assignments based on those songs that the kids had to do. They had 3 days to, or technically 4 days to do them because I had them do an optional Zoom meeting Kid shows up to the optional Zoom meeting on Tuesday. Turns in all the work by Wednesday. Like, detailed, really excited, you know, like, offered some, like, went, did his own research, found some songs that he was interested in that he thought were interesting, that he thought I should know about, that were on the same topic. Kid's totally clued into the class. Again, wow. If I had shut him down, what would have happened for this quarter? I probably wouldn't have gotten that engagement. So it's one story out of, like, I did that for, you know, I did that for 8 kids, and 6 of them didn't do anything, but... Right. You know, one of them did enough to get across the finish line. But again, like, if you go to your default response of, I'm not going to be flexible because this person didn't do what I asked them to when I asked them to do it, I don't know that I would have gotten that work from that kid, and I know that I wouldn't have that engagement with him right now. So that's a success story, being flexible, and a reminder that it's not going to work with every kid, right? There are kids that you're going to be flexible with, and they're still not going to meet it. But when they do, it feels really cool.
Right. Right. And I love that you talked about the procrastination to deadline oriented. And I think about the false deadlines versus real deadlines. And like, mm-hmm. We're like, okay, no, for real. Like, I have to type grades into the grade book. Like, this is the real deadline, not like the due date I put from a month mm-hmm. ago. Yeah. This is the real deadline. And like there has to be the line. So I love that you shared that in both the amazing success and then the continued progression, as well as the, it's not going to always work that way. So yeah. Appreciate it. Well, we love you all. Thanks for coming and joining us. And we'll see you back here next week. Always learning at Peak State.
Make it a great day.